That team sure did suck last night. They just plain sucked. I've seen teams suck before, but they were the suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked.
Steve Rosenblum.
There was a keg stand I lost to an 81-year-old lady. She got off the ninth floor, but it was really close.
Mark Grody.
I've been waiting to get a hold of this guy for years. Channel 2 News is out there interviewing people. Yeah, I've been talking to my wife about getting Steve. He once connected my dots and more to my plate. I'm going to dunk his ass.
They suck, so you don't have to.
Can't you morons do anything right?
Founding members of the WB Club.
Smoke weed every day.
The three words that describe this show, and I quote,
stink, stank, stunk.
It's Saturday Suckage on the Score.
We should be 670 WSUK.
What is your name? I don't know who you are, the host.
Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage. Welcome in. Welcome back. Let's take roll, find out who else is here. Grobber.
It sucks, and it freebases.
Don Cooper.
If I think something sucks, I'll tell you it sucks.
Jake Arrieta.
This sucks. Really, it does.
Eloy Jimenez.
Hey, you guys not going to make anyway. You guys suck. And when I got traded the next day, oh, welcome to the suck team.
Toby!
Oh my God, this sucks!
Random Bears fan.
At the front of the field, we suck!
Terry Bars!
Finally made a list of somebody who thinks he sucks besides I do.
Liam Hendrick!
I wouldn't say seeking perfection, it's just mainly trying not to suck.
Julie Swyka.
Man, that sucks.
Wilson Contreras.
Losing suck, I'll tell you that, and that's all I can say.
George Wendt.
We had fun, but there you go. I sucked.
Garth Algar.
Turn it off, man! Turn it off! It's sucking my will to live!
The legend, Steve Dahl.
Disco sucks! Disco sucks!
Candace Parker.
I mean, it sucks.
Roquan Smith.
Yeah, man. Sucks.
Zach LaVine.
It sucks to have it happen game one.
DeMar DeRozan.
You know, it just sucks.
Mike Dantomo.
It all sucks. There's not degrees of suck. It all sucks.
Josh Allen.
Sucks. Losing sucks. Sucks.
Pete Fairbanks.
No, I thought it generally sucked. I didn't think it was a specific suck. I thought it was like an all-encompassing type of suck.
I love him. AJ Pierzynski.
They should have just come out and said, hey, we're going to suck this year. And everyone would have been like, okay.
That goes for every year. Pedro Grifol.
We're 20 games in. Our record sucks.
Keep going. Michael Kopech.
It sucks, man. There's no easy way to put it.
Mark Burley.
So it did suck.
J.D. Martinez.
They say we suck, we suck. Let's suck. Let's go suck together. Let's go have fun sucking.
Zach Eflin.
It sucks. It's as a result of us sucking.
Bob Costas.
I also don't understand, or maybe I should just applaud you, for having the self-confidence to label your own show Saturday Suckage.
Trash Panda.
Oh, hello.
Look,
what's going on?
Look who got promoted back to Saturday Suckage.
And the open is still the same, which is great.
Well, we added Zach Eflin, thanks to Sean Anderson of CSGO and Late of the Score. He said, oh, I'm just anything for a bit. He's willing to contribute. Sean Anderson, thank you. There's Zach Eflin adding to the roll call.
My dream of the roll call taking up the entire first segment of this show is coming to fruition.
Still alive.
It's a dream that I've had for 5 years now. When did we start this bit? I can't remember.
I'm not sure, but welcome back. He got paroled from middays. He got promoted. He got time off for good behavior. He got promoted to Saturday Suckage. He's back. And trust me, before this hour is up, there will be a good serving of Studzinski and meatballs.
We're putting the band back together.
Yeah. Grody will be here at noon. There you go. There's your band. So as you should know, this is Saturday Suckage as well. We suck so you don't have to. We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealer. Our phone number at the Score, 312 844-670-6400. That number also gets you to our text line. Again, that's 312-644-6700. All right, look, I want this to be better. We all want the Bears to be a winner. We need it. We've earned it. We deserve it. We want it. We want to believe the quarterback is an answer where there hasn't been an answer for 40 years. But the quarterback holds the ball too long, which will kill his line as well as himself. We saw that last year. Quarterback has trouble under center, maybe only inexperience, but he has trouble playing quarterback. And that's his position, so that's a bad thing. Caleb Williams also seemed to have trouble watching film or video. Seth Wickersham's article indicated as much. He wrote that Williams said he was left alone to watch video last year by the Confederacy of Dunces in charge of the NFL's Heritage franchise. Williams wasn't
Everything's looking where it is in terms of good.
He wasn't told what to watch. But shouldn't he know? Shouldn't he know how to do that? It's a legitimate question. Shouldn't he have learned that in college? Perhaps not. DJ Moore's comments last year, remember those? He hinted at trouble. And it ended with DJ Moore saying, we're going to do it Caleb's way. So we can read into that more context, perhaps. Such as Caleb's way doesn't include knowing everything he's seeing, doesn't include getting the ball out fast, doesn't include an internal clock that saves a sack. Maybe all of it's true, maybe none of it's true, maybe some of it's true, but DJ Moore was like a prisoner sending out signals. Help, SOS, blinking. Our offense and my career are being held against our will. Something else. A big part of this story, or why it didn't play out in polite society here, was Caleb didn't want to nuke the city. That was the phrase, and that was part of Carl Williams' scorched Bears plan to stop his son from being drafted by the Bears. Now, the dad did what any smart dad would do. I'm a dad. I would draw up an exit plan so my son wouldn't go to the franchise where quarterbacks go to die. His son is dying still, by the way. Carl Williams was right about all the suckage at Hallis Hall. And that's why we're talking about him here on Saturday Suckage. The reason Carl Williams' plan didn't play out was Caleb came here. He came, he saw, he liked. He said he liked what he felt. He liked what he saw here, and he didn't want to, quote, nuke the city. If that's his quote, and if not, it's a quote made up by his dad to the reporter. I'm not sure what Carl Williams' plan called for in nuking the city. Rip the McCaskies? History of the Bears' failure? That would be very endearing when you think of it, because we do that. We've lived that. The Bears' Super Bowl title, that trophy, it turns 40 this year. It reaches middle age. It gets a dad bod. It gets fat with layers of stupid. My God, that's the McCaskey family legacy. 40 years ago, we did this. I still don't know what else Carl Williams might have had in mind to have his son do to nuke the city. Horrible traffic? Yeah, that would be, we'd like him. He'd be one of us. The grass at Soldier's Field? Putting ketchup on a hot dog? I want to know what the plan for nuking the city was. Whatever. Caleb didn't want to do it. He gave himself up. He gave himself up to authorities peaceably when he was drafted by the Bears. He was handcuffed, taken into custody, and surrendered his career and various body parts Those 68 sacks, it was almost an NFL record. He hasn't talked yet about the whole thing, which is another face plant in this silly episode. Another face plant for the quarterback, for his family, and the team. If only Daddy Williams was smart enough to kick his kid out there in public to answer and explain and end this. But dumb gets dumber around here. We've seen that with the Bears. Doesn't surprise us, does it? This was a franchise that sent out a coach to do a day after presser and then fired him later that day because they couldn't fire him before the presser because they couldn't figure out what they were supposed to do. And when they finally addressed it after a long weekend of nothing, the general manager got publicly neutered by the team president. Did it in broad daylight. There you go, Bears fans. There you go, McCaskies. What a proud moment in your franchise history. So I don't know if it's him, Caleb, or his little league dad, or his mom, or the face-planting Bears. Caleb has said nothing. He's clarified nothing. This stupid decision, the article, builds on itself and eats itself. This is the public messaging version of Caleb holding the ball too long. Dude, learn. Show us you've learned. Williams family, show us you've learned. Eventually, Caleb's going to come out of hiding. Ollie, ollie, oxen free. And it'll be interesting to hear about the plan to nuke the city. I think it'll be anyways. He didn't do it, and that made me wonder. I have no idea if this is fair, but you know what? The fact that he's been silent, nobody's done anything to counter any of what Seth Wickersham wrote. If he's not strong enough to nuke the city, Caleb didn't want to do it, is he strong enough to lead the city to a Super Bowl? Like, nobody would doubt Jim McMahon's ability to nuke everything if he was of a mind. I'm hard-pressed to find another Bears quarterback I could say that about. As tough and smart the way you believe McMahon would if he wanted to nuke a city. He was accused of that in New Orleans during the Super Bowl. That was 40 years ago, the Bears' proud moment. I mean, the best thing, I'm with Carl Williams, the best thing to do would have been to kill the franchise and the city all over the media, local, national, you're available for everyone. You're available for TV, for radio, for print, for podcasts, everywhere. Make sure you didn't get stuck playing for the Bears. Caleb didn't want to. Maybe he's not strong enough to play that act, to see that through. So if he's not strong enough to pull that off, if he can't lead the charge to get out of playing for the Bears and stand his ground, is he strong enough to rally a locker room to a trophy? I don't know that that's necessarily a fair connection. But I will say this. There are a lot of veterans might be giving him a stink eye over the wah-wah about having to be shown what he needs to watch on tape. Some will understand it and said it looks different in the NFL than it looks on college and your study habits have to become different. But I don't think anybody else in that locker room or a lot of other people in that locker room want to hear about a quarterback going wah-wah. There are probably other players who want to steal his lunch money for the whole Little League father thing. Be an adult, dude. Some of them have to be thinking that. Be an adult. We need an adult at the most important spot on the field and in the locker room. Not the guy who cried in his mother's arms after losing to Washington a couple years ago. Some of his teammates might be thinking that. Dude, you don't need a treat parent. We're in the NFL. Maybe Ben Johnson can coach the crap out of him. Maybe Ben Johnson can help lead the guy who's supposed to lead the team. And maybe Ben Johnson can leave only the hero stuff. By the way, there was a lot of hero stuff with Williams last year. Despite the McCaskies' trickle-down idiocracy at Hallis Hall. There are a lot of moments that would have made him a legend had there been any kind of sane coaching. There wasn't. Ben Johnson, it's not a might. He has to. He has to coach the crap out of Caleb Williams in so many ways. Because if not, Carl Williams will continue to be right. I'm Steve Rosenblum. This is Saturday Suckage. I think we're going to have a serving of Studzinski and meatballs coming up next. And we will talk about what Caleb Williams, what should be expected of him, what shouldn't be, what we can understand, and what we should be admonished for. And I'm sure that indignation, one of Trash Panda's four major food groups, will be heard, will be on display, will be served. I'm Steve Rosenblum. This is Saturday Suckage. Thanks for joining me. Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
It's come to my attention that the quarterback's been out in the media over the last week. And just to get out in front of that a little bit, I just wanted to say I wasn't here last year, and so I can't speak too much in terms of what it was like before he got here and when he got here last year. But from my 4 months on the job, he's been outstanding to work with, and we just are focusing on getting a little better every day.
That is Bears EMT, Ben Johnson. And I love that. So the article came out. Carl Williams didn't want his kid drafted, which any smart father would do. And Caleb Williams elected not to nuke the city, although I'm dying to know what nuke the city meant. What was the plan for that? And all this talk, and there's no Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams is still in hiding, I guess. Daddy didn't throw him out there, or daddy's hiding him. I don't know. Except the Bears, the face-planting Bears just can't get anything right, even when they get it right. And nothing's been said. So many words have been said over this thing. And then the Bears finally have their OTAs, and there's Ben Johnson, and he does a wonderful thing of just getting out in front of it. Our quarterback's been out there. Yeah, I love that. And so there are many facets to this, and one of the things was Caleb Williams watching video by himself. He was left alone. And I think that's something you should learn in college. It's also something Lincoln Riley quarterbacks there's a pattern there, right? Didn't Kyler Murray have to have a clause put into his contract that he had to do a certain amount of homework before he could go play video games?
Yeah, well, Kyler Murray was obsessed with video games. So it's a different situation.
And here comes Studzinski and meatballs. Here comes Trash Panda. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, hi.
And welcome Bears. Back to his indignation or level-headedness, depending where you fall in this argument.
I think it depends on where we're going with this one.
Well, the idea of not being able to watch film, being left alone, was in stark contrast to what Ben Johnson said was most important. And I will credit Ben Johnson, first of all, for the way he handled this. And even before that, Caleb and some other skill players were at the introductory press conference, and more than, you know, get comfortable with being uncomfortable, he was talking about, he'd sit down and watch everything with Caleb. Here's how I think. What did you see? I want to know what you're thinking.
Because Ben Johnson says that the play caller and the quarterback need to see the field the same way. Right.
And he's so right about that. So then the gray area is, does he know how to watch film? Or are there different levels of that? And I know that you have points to make about this, so I'm just going to back off and worship Kevlar.
So I think that this little excerpt, particularly when it comes to the idea, like Caleb watching film, and Caleb, this is a quote from his dad, from Caleb, in the excerpt, and I want to make sure we're continually being clear about that. A lot of these quotes in this excerpt in this Seth Wickersham story are from Carl Williams. There's the only direct quote from Caleb to Seth Wickersham is the he didn't want to nuke the city quote. That's Caleb. And then there's some stuff from Caleb's press conference after Ben Johnson was hired. Everything else is from Carl Williams. So I just want to make sure we're clear on who was talking about what. And not that Caleb wasn't involved, but this is Carl quoting Caleb to Seth Wickersham a lot of times. I just want to make sure we're clearing that. But anyway, the film study.
But that's a legitimate point, and here's why. Caleb is going to have to answer for it. So while you are right that this is dad coloring right. what the visiting his sins upon his son, the son still has to answer for him at some point whenever he surfaces.
I agree. And it's not the first time that Caleb's going to have to answer for stuff that his dad did. Not that I'm sure that Caleb signed off on this. I'm sure he did. But it's not the first time that Caleb is having to answer for stuff that his dad has said, right? So that's not a new experience for him. Anyway, so this aspect of film study, and I just want to make sure what I have gleaned from this, the idea of nobody was watching film with him, he just turns it on, not getting any guidance. I'm sure that Caleb was watching film on his own, right? I don't think we should doubt that he was taking time to watch film on his own. I think that the problem he was getting at was wasn't getting the correct guidance that he wanted from coaches about what specifically to look at. And that's mainly because as a rookie quarterback, and this is my idea, watching film at the NFL level is different than watching film at the college level. So like in Lincoln Riley's offense, I'm sure that he knew how to watch film based on Lincoln Riley's offense. And Lincoln Riley would tell him, hey, this is what we need. But that offense is a lot less complex mm-hmm. than an NFL offense. Yeah. It's an air raid offense. It's not overly complex. And, you know, there's some NFL concepts in there, but it's an extreme college offense designed to throw the ball over the yard, right? So I'm sure that Caleb knew how to watch film based on that because he was an extremely successful college quarterback. And so not being able to watch, like, I know he knows how to look at film and understand the basics of what he's seen. But, hey, even myself, I was pretty good at watching film in high school, but I never played college football, and I'm sure it's a lot different. If you put college film on for me and told me to game plan around it, I'd be like, I don't know what I'm looking at, man. So now it gets even more that gets expedited up to the NFL level, where it's even more complex. Because NFL defenses are extraordinarily complex and nothing like you've seen in college, unless you know a few defenses, like Notre Dame's defense is basically an NFL defense, right? So I want to make sure that we're clear on this. Like, he needed help on how to learn to watch film at the NFL level, and I don't think he was getting that. I think that's what Caleb was saying when he's saying they don't guide me on what to look at. Now, some of this he probably could have gleaned out himself, I'm sure. Like, he's complicit in this too, but I put more of this on Shane Waldron, Matt Eberflus, not basically treating him like a veteran. It's like, oh, he knows what he's doing because he's this star kid and he's coming and he knows what he's doing. He's got this. When in reality, he needed a lot more guidance on, hey, this is what you need to be looking at from the Vikings defense. It's not just here's their third down defense. It's they do a bunch of crap on third down. This is what you need to be looking at to guide through, to cut through all the crap and figure out where to go with the ball. So all in all, what I'm saying here is that this has been blown out of proportion because it's not that Caleb has. I do not believe that this kid who has been singularly driven on being the best quarterback in the NFL since he was 10 years old wasn't taking time by himself to try to figure out the complexities of NFL defenses. But there's only so much you can do by yourself when you don't know what you don't know.
Here's a guy who, remember, we heard in training camp when he was talking about Keenan Allen, he raved about Keenan Allen. How they, in spending time together, Keenan Allen would essentially test him. How well he knew the playbook. How well he knew the assignments. And yet there he is left alone. Come on, at some point you say, can I get some help here? Now the Bears did Bears did a lousy job. Nobody was allowed to talk to the sacred son. Nobody was allowed to see him. One guy, and he was the worst guy imaginable for Caleb Williams, is Shane Waldron. I mean, eventually you had a head coach who 2 weeks earlier wasn't allowed to talk to the quarterback, and he was the passing game coordinator. The Confederacy of Dunces up there was masterfully limiting the most important draft choice in franchise history. And that's their fault. But what's on the responsibility of the player is, I don't see this. I need to talk to somebody. I want to know if he went to seek help and was rebuffed.
And that's something we might never know. because I don't know if he'll be asked that whenever he does speak.
He'll be asked a lot of things.
I'm sure he will, but I just don't know if we'll ever get really to the bottom of, hey, how much were you trying to get help? And, you know, maybe he didn't, you know, I don't, you know, maybe he was just like, these guys are idiots. I just got to figure this out myself. Like, because, you know, yeah. while front facing, and like to his credit, front facing publicly, he was as steady last year at the podium as you could be. Never threw his coaches under the bus, backed up his offensive line that was terrible, even though he didn't need to. Never threw anyone under the bus, put a lot of stuff on himself. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. But maybe, like, who knows what he was thinking internally? He might have been thinking, these guys are idiots. They're going to be gone. I need to figure this out myself right now until all of this crap around me gets better.
I will agree with that. And that makes me wonder even more why he hasn't been out here, why he hasn't stepped up. That's been his MO. I mean, when he was, let's go back to, I mentioned the incident in Washington. They lost to Washington. There it goes. The season's over. And he's getting hugged from Mama as he's crying in her arms. He was pretty close to immediately, seizing on that opportunity to talk about his mental health and be an example to others who are willing to be vulnerable, who are showing that vulnerability, that kind of emotion, and willing to defend that against people who claimed it was a weakness. Some of those people might be in his locker room now because it's a macho game. It's all about toughness. And quarterbacks doing that, I agree with what Caleb Williams did and said about mental health, about taking care of yourself. Vulnerability can be a strength. You admit it, you seek help. And the idea that he wouldn't seek help when he was left alone to watch film, I don't know. Maybe he's like you and he'd rather watch Simpson episode after Simpson episode.
And again, we don't know if he was seeking help or how willing they were to get him help. And maybe when Thomas Brown took over, things were a little different, right? Because we don't know when in the season this quote that he told his dad, they're not helping me, mm-hmm. basically. So I would guess, based on what we heard and saw from Thomas Brown, that he was being more proactive with Caleb, because he Thomas Brown said himself that quarterbacks are babied and they need to be tougher on them. So I think that after Thomas Brown took over, things were a little more proactive with the quarterback. I'm just guessing. I don't know that for sure.
I think the way you get tougher with a quarterback is point out every mistake. That's tough love.
I think that's what Thomas Brown started doing.
And I think Johnson's going to continue that.
Yes, and I know that was not happening with Shane Waldron. And based on everything that we've heard from players in the last year and the fact that the GM has said steps were skipped, that to me means that mistakes were happening, but they were letting them go rather than hammering them out before moving on to the next step.
I don't understand why Ryan Poles is still employed, unless the McCaskies thought it was worth it to have him publicly neutered by Kevin Warren. So Kevin Warren is protecting him by using him as just simply an errand boy. Go get me the coach I want. Go get me this.
Hiring Ben Johnson saved his job.
We don't need you. Well, that was Kevin Warren hiring Ben Johnson. I don't believe for a moment Ryan Poles had the authority to do that. That's Ben Johnson. I mean, that's Kevin Warren. And he's going to sell it to George McCaskey. This is what I want. This is what I had Ryan Poles do. When you've indicted yourself the way Ryan Poles has, well, yeah, I saw a training camp. You know, there were things that were off. And like you said, trash band, steps were not taken. It wasn't done in the right order. You're the GM. How's your quarterback doing throughout the season? At different points when things were going well, they were 4-2. When they were in the middle of a 10-game losing streak, what was going on? You're allowed to have a say. You're obligated to do that. I don't know why Ryan Poles is still employed. I don't think this is good for Caleb Williams' health. Because now look what happens. The man who brought you Nate Davis and Ryan Bates has brought you what you think are better offensive linemen. But on whose judgment?
I would counter argue here that a lot of smart people that we have on this station would tell us that they've done a good job in the interior of the offensive line.
Well, certainly.
The question I have the most is about Jonah Jackson, because he basically didn't play last year.
And when he did, he got benched.
And there was a lot that went into that, because he had a weird situation last year with the Rams where he kind of started at guard, but then they moved him to center, and then they found out that this rookie guard that they had was good, and they didn't want to move him. And so Jonah Jackson just kind of lost his job by attrition. It was a weird situation that I'm willing to let play out, because when he was with the Lions and had a steady position, he was pretty damn good.
Ben Johnson's getting the band back together, isn't he? That's kind of what's going on. Well, I hope it works. We know they're more talented, but we don't know if they're talented enough. They've never worked together.
We're putting the band back together.
Yeah, we are. Grody. Grody's back here on Saturday Suckage with Trash Panda producing, and we're all here. We're putting the band back together. That'll be at noon. We'll talk more Bears then. Backing up your point, and I want it to be played, Greg Cosell was on the station, right?
Yesterday afternoon with Spiegel and Holmes.
And he's from NFL Films. So this guy watches, well, apparently more video, understands more video than Caleb Williams. And I don't know whether he needs help doing it. He can have some help. He knows enough.
Can we get Greg Cosell to watch film with Caleb Williams?
It would be better than what's happened so far, hasn't it?
I think that'd be great.
Yeah.
They should have asked him yesterday, hey, Greg, can you come up to House Hall and watch film with Caleb?
Caleb, what did you see here? How could you throw? Why didn't you check to this play? But he made a really good point about watching offensive film by talking about a defensive guy.
The game is not about, hey, let's go out and make plays. It plays out that way, and that's what you see when you watch games, but that's not the way it's taught. And just being, you know, look, I've been very, very lucky, guys, in my career for all this to happen the way it's happened, you know. So I'm not saying I'm smarter than anybody else. I've just been really fortunate, and I just love watching tape. I mean, just to give you an example, I'm already starting to look at tape of guys who will be in next year's draft. I mean, that's just what I do, you know. Just the nuances, the subtleties. I mean, I remember having a conversation with Dennis Allen, who's now the DC for you guys, and you know, I've known him for years, and I remember him telling me when I was down in New Orleans a number of years ago, and he said, well, we have 10 versions of cover three. Just think about that. That means you got to coach all that, you got to teach all that, but that means if he has 10 versions of cover three, he's probably got 10 versions of other defenses as well. So it's all nuance, it's all detail, it's all how you coach it, how you teach it. And especially on defense, if one guy makes a mistake, you can give up a 60-yard touchdown. So that's always what's fascinated me, the whole process of it, is how this stuff is taught so that the players can really execute it. Because as we all know, you don't want players to have to think when they're playing. You just want them to be able to react.
See, that's what I'm talking about. How is this stuff taught? So how was Caleb being taught to look at, they didn't play a Dennis Allen defense last year, but if, you know, when they're looking at a Brian Flores defense, Brian Flores probably has 15 different versions of the same coverage or blitz package. How was he being taught how to look at that? And it was obviously, now he actually had pretty good success against Brian Flores' defense last year, but I don't know if that's because he was being taught properly or just because
he was reacting
and they happened to have good play designs that week, right?
One of the things that Greg Cosell said, and that was him on with Spiegel and Holmes on the afternoon show yesterday from NFL Films, and one of the things he said mirrors what John Shoup said about Ben Johnson, and that the mantra they have, which if he can teach Caleb Williams this, and I'm sure that's what Brian Flores does with, or Dennis Allen did with his defense, we've got 10 versions of cover three. The same thing looks different, and different things look the same. And that's what John Shoup said about Ben Johnson. He can make the same thing look different. He can make different things look the same. And that's the way he's planning an offense. According to John Shoup, you have to believe Ben Johnson is hewed to that, is following that as he sets up this offense, and I believe he's trying to teach that to Caleb Williams. This is what we're going to look the same here, only this play's different. We're going to make this look different, but this is the same read, the first read that you have, because this is going to be open because of the way we've distracted them and all these things. So I want to believe you're right, Studs, and I'm siding with you that he would be he would be taught in a professional manner.
I have zero doubt in my mind that he's going to be taught better under Ben Johnson than he was under Eberflus and Waldron.
Now we'll find out what kind of student he is.
And a lot of what we've heard, anyway, from former teammates, current teammates, is that he is a grinder. Like, he's in the facility a lot. And I think, again, this goes back to this guy's wanted the same thing since he was 10 years old. And he's extremely driven and extremely competitive. This is a flying under the radar thing with Caleb Williams. He's extraordinarily competitive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he wants to win and he wants to be great. And with that comes being a good student of the game. I believe he is. And now I think he's got better tools around him to facilitate his talent and let it shine through.
Well, I hope you're right. We could use that. It would be a happy thing to see. It would be entertaining.
Chicago, when the Bears are good. That's a great place. It's a better place than it is already.
Yes. 40 years ago when Chicago was the best.
2018 was fun.
Yeah, that was,
you know, flashing the pin, but it was really fun. I remember coming into the station the day after they beat the Rams on Sunday Night Football and just kind of strutting. Yeah, that felt real. The whole city felt good.
Just kind of strutting because you did it for them.
I was at the game.
Oh, wow. You did
so
your
I was part.
Part.
I did my part. Yeah.
There you did. All right. We're going to take a break when we come back. The other item that came up this week was in the NFL, major news, was the tush push. And it's just so hypocritical. And there's such BS. George McCaskey, you are just so full of it. But we will hear from a former NFL player. And you don't hear many NFL players complaining about this play, because the NFL is full of crap on the whole thing. I'm Steve Rosenblum, produced by Trash Panda. He's back. He has been promoted to the big show after serving time on middays. This is Saturday Suckage. We suck so you don't have to. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're putting the band back together.
We worked so hard at that. A little insulted that in the sense of it's like, well, it's just a gimme. Like, we worked so hard at that play. We're talking about banning it. Like, you know, I think that's a little unfair. And again, a little insulted by that in the sense of, like, A.J. Brown's really good at catching the deep ball. I don't think we're going to ban that. Patrick Mahomes is a phenomenal quarterback. We can't ban all the things that he does
right,
so
no
well.
One passes.
Yeah. Nick Sirianni, Eagles. Your Super Bowl champion, Eagles. They got a play nobody can stop. Except the NFL's trying to, and there's a whole host of reasons and conspiracies and stupidities and hypocrisies going on here. And the tush push was proffered. The banning of the tush push was proffered by the Green Bay Packers. And the reason why is not because the Packers are, well, maybe they are weenies, but the reason why is that they don't have an owner. And nobody could get blamed for trying to do that. They didn't want to put a face on it, so they put the Packers on it. And
you can just blame the Packers as a whole. That's fine.
That's right.
I think they underestimate Chicago's ability, Chicago specifically, his ability to hate Green Bay.
That's right. And there was Chicago's chairman siding with Green Bay. George McCaskey sided with them. He said, oh, yeah, we think it's a dangerous play. Well, where's the medical data? Oh, there is none. Oh, but it looks dangerous. Okay, so Roger Goodell really wants to ban this thing because he doesn't think it plays well. It doesn't look good on TV. And if Roger Goodell is saying this, he's not saying it's the entertainment part. He's talking about the medical data that doesn't exist. And guess what? There's so little medical data. The NFL's health and safety doctor wasn't even at the vote. He had nothing to say about this because he wasn't there in this dangerous, inherently dangerous play that George McCaskey wants to help vote down and ban. You hear owners talking about it. Goodell must have been put up to this by Jerry Jones, by Robert Kraft, because he's an errand boy for them. So here's the thinking. Well, wait, this is a dangerous play. That's what Roger says. And then puppets like McCaskey repeat it. And it's really about entertainment, and that Goodell lets that out. But Jerry Jones' team will never in a million years be able to stop that play in his own division. So Jerry Jones needs to have this banned. So he tells Little Roger, go stop this thing. Meanwhile, it's all about owners, isn't it? Chairman, whatever. All about the suits. Have you heard players complain about it? Brian Baldinger, wonderful broadcaster. He was an offensive lineman. He was an NFL player. He was on with Mark Grody coming up at 12. We're getting the band back together. Mark Grody and Dan Wiederer on the midday show, Score Middays. And he was asked about the tush push.
It's a great play. And, you know, the teams that don't execute it well simply don't understand physics. The Eagles practice that play more than any other play in their whole playbook. When you do that and you execute the way they do, you shouldn't have that play removed simply because you're excellent at it. And other teams that try it have no idea how to do it. And trying to get it crossed out of the league, that's wrong. The Eagles perfected the play. They work on the play. Let other teams work on it. Let them put the emphasis on the play. Walk through it. Talk through it. Practice it every single day. Walk through it in the training room, in the off season, during the season, getting ready for a Super Bowl. They never stop working on that play. So to take that play out simply because it doesn't look like an NFL play or it looks gimmicky or it looks like a scrum, it doesn't to the Philadelphia Eagles. Not at all.
Cowards. You want to ban something you can't stop or can't imitate. Can you imagine? I have no idea where George Halas would come down on this. But could you imagine him going to the NFL and saying, we need to ban the Green Bay sweep, the Packers sweep, because we can't stop it? We have Butkus, we have Buffon, we can't stop it, so we need to ban this.
Take it further back. What if the league, way back when George Halas invented the T formation,
and he
put up 70 points in a championship game, they didn't ban the T formation.
No, they didn't. And for the, you want to say it's not a football play. It's a right. Well, it's a football play because it's run in a football game.
It's actually the original football play. You all the way back before they had real plays in football. This is what they did.
Did they even have helmets back then?
No, they did. It was leather. I'm talking way back in the early 1900s when the game was in its infancy. This is what they did. They just pushed forward.
So they want to talk about it. It's not entertainment. It's a rugby play. Well, guess what? You know the hook and lateral. That's a Harlem Globetrotters play. That's not a football play either. And guess what? You want to talk about danger? There are more defenseless receivers in the hook and lateral than there are defenseless or players injured in the tush push. It's really a there's a lot of lying going on about this, a lot of hypocrisy, and George McCaskey is right there with it. I got more to say on this later. And there's just a lot of stupid on this. There's no data that says it's dangerous. And you can legitimately believe Roger Goodell was told to push for this because somebody who plays the Eagles a lot and can't stop it and doesn't know how to stop it and can't run it for himself, and Jerry Jones has got to be pushing Roger Goodell to get this out. Roger, just tell McCann, it's ugly to watch. No, you know what's ugly? You're being general manager, Jerry. That's what's ugly. We're going to take a break. We have more Bears to talk about with our Bears reporter and one of the co-founders of Saturday Suckage and co-founders of the Wake and Bake Club. By the way, a Wake and Bake Club first. At 1:25, we will have a meeting of the Wake and Bake Club. We will have our first guest.
Smoke weed every day.
Of the Wake and Bake Club. We've not done this before, and this is sensational. It's a well-known author of sports books and a well-known author of music articles. And he is the confluence. He's at the intersection of music and sports, and it's not Matt Spiegel, although it could be.
Could you say it's who Matt Spiegel attains to be someday?
No, Matt Spiegel's there. Tributosaurus is the same intersection of sports and music. This is a different way of going about it. Spiegel wants to perform. Dan Epstein.
Different version.
He lives to write and writes to live, and both about music and sports. And somehow I'll bet they've crossed paths, Dan Epstein and Matt Spiegel. That's a pretty heavily trafficked intersection, music and sports. Because like every athlete wants to be an actor. Every actor wants to be an athlete, and they all secretly long to be rock stars. That's what happens at that intersection. Take a break. Mark Grody's going to be here. We're getting the band back together. Grody, Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.